You're back in the DFSR, and it's a special Christmas experiment where I do the talking at the beginning of the episode. My name is James Davis.
Doug Norrie.
Yeah, there we go. And that's Doug Norrie. I should have said in that. See, I'm still getting learning the ropes here, pal. Yeah, today we're going to do our NBA podcast. We're going to do a game-by-game breakdown of all the games happening in the NBA tonight. There's a big pile of them since it's a Wednesday. And I've taken a few days off from basketball, so we figured we'd put Doug in the hot seat where I'm going to ask him questions. But before we get to that, just a reminder, you can still go to dfsr.com/NBA, and you can get a three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will give you optimal lineups and projections for every player in all the sports that we cover all year round. So right now that's the NBA and the NFL, and we also have a basic tool for the NHL as well that's powered by our buddy Chris Durrell, who also does the great hockey writing over on the website. It's free for 3 days, and it's $34.95 a month after that, and that'll be all you need probably to win great fortune and have beautiful women flocking all over you for the foreseeable future. So let's talk about the NBA today, because again, I know next to nothing about what's going on outside of just injuries and some brief stuff. But it's a pretty big slate, and yeah, just a lot of good games. So anything major we should know before we get into some games?
One thing is that's interesting about today is that there's a lot of teams on back-to-backs. Like, I think there's like six or seven teams playing on back-to-backs that played yesterday. And that always does throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into just some like minutes expectations, because different teams, as you know, different teams just kind of manage this sort of thing differently, right? So like some teams are real, you know, sometimes you get like the Kings that are just kind of a mess no matter what. And it does seem like they do manage some minutes on a back-to-back. And then you get other teams like Brooklyn that kind of doesn't matter on a game-to-game basis. So I think that's going to be Indiana's another one that they don't seem to worry too much about it. So there are a bunch of teams that played yesterday that are, again, playing today. And there's not too much injury news that is coming from those teams. So I'm not worried necessarily about rest for a lot of guys. But there are going to be – and we can kind of mention as we go through some of these teams. But that is something I think we're going to want to take a look at, or just keep an eye on in case some teams just decide to kind of fiddle with their rosters a little bit, or for some that just see a tick up in minutes from what they did yesterday, because some teams just didn't play all that much. Anyway, so we can get into it. Sure. It's kind of a case-by-case sort of situation.
All right, well, let's start with a case. Case number one, it's a game with one of the lowest totals on the day. Not usually a lot of exciting DFS prospects in general, but that's Dallas at Indiana. Indiana favored by 6. It's got, like I said, one of the lowest overall totals at 205, second only to the Memphis-LA game. Anything we're liking from this game? I mean, this reeks of a Skipperino, but maybe you're seeing something I can't.
Yeah, I don't mind. They have some guys, especially Dallas, they have kind of consolidated some of their minutes around guys like Barnes, Kleber. It's like Max Kleber. I heard them pronounce it during the game last night. And actually, I was saying Kleber, and I know that's wrong. But he's been playing minutes in the 30s. I don't mind them totally. And at the same time, it's just kind of Dallas. I mean, well, I guess Kleber only played 25 minutes last night. Barnes is a guy I don't mind. He needs to score, although he did have a good game yesterday with going with a double double. Dennis Smith Jr.'s minutes are ticking back up just a little bit. Overall, though, not that much to like. And then going the other way, obviously Indiana. Dallas is just a bad matchup. They're just
slow. One of the slowest teams in the league. Their defense has actually improved a little bit from where it was in the early season. But yeah, the fifth slowest team in the world for a team in Indiana that kind of has their minutes relatively established. Like, it doesn't seem like there's probably a ton of value there, right?
Yeah, and they barely played last night because they got completely crushed by Detroit. Came out last night, and Tobias Harris just shot the lights out of the gym. He was 6-for-6 at halftime, ended up shooting 7-for-8 from three, 6-for-6 from three, 7-for-8, and they just got completely killed. So I'm actually not really worried too much about Indiana's minutes ticking back up, like for guys like Turner, Oladipo, especially if he's going to see minutes in the upper 30s. But then overall, Dallas is just a pretty bad matchup. So I don't think there's a lot to love here. Though that being said, I could see maybe the only guy I could see maybe creeping him into something is, and now never mind, Oladipo's over 9,700. So yeah, I think overall this game is probably pretty much a skip.
Alrighty, let's move into the other 7 o'clock game then. That's Boston at Charlotte. Again, this game not a super high total, but we do have a little bit of injury news here. Marcus Morris peeked his head back out for Christmas Day, but like the groundhog, he receded back. He's going to be out tonight, so that loosens things up a little bit in the front court for them. Jaylen Brown also listed as doubtful, which I guess means it's not out of the question that he'll play, but probably not. That does free up some opportunity here for Boston. Is there any value that we're going to key in on?
Well, Morris and Semi Ojeleji, if they're both out, there's a scenario that you do see more of Aaron Baines, I think. And then the Jaylen Brown one is interesting because last time he sat, Marcus Smart got the start and actually played like 34 minutes, completely stunk. He shot 3 for 10 from the field, only 1 for 6 from 3. He's really not a good 3-point shooter anyway. But I mean,
is he just doomed to just have less production when he plays with the starting unit? Because that's how it seems. Like, it seems like when he's the energy guy who runs a second unit off the bench, he's actually more reliable on a points per minute basis than he is as a starter.
It does seem that way. I mean, when you share the court with Kyrie, it's going to be tough. And then Tatum has been shooting a decent amount. He has some usage too. So if you're going to be on the court with those two guys, it's going to be hard. I mean, the thing is, Smart is just not a very good offensive player. That's mostly his problem. He's a high energy guy. He can get to the basket. He's very good at defense, which is why his minutes stick around. But in terms of shooting, he's not a good shooter. He's never been a good shooter, and it doesn't seem like he's ever going to be a good shooter. And I think that's going to be most of the problem. So with him, you're kind of banking on. With him, you're just kind of banking on that the minutes are there, and they probably should be. He's so versatile that playing 33 to 34 minutes is not out of the realm of possibility for him. And if that's the case, then he is probably a value at this point. I don't know. I mean, do you think are you significantly worried enough about it that like even at 34 minutes? I mean, he's also like the thing about him too. It's like for a spot starter, he's not necessarily cheap. Like on FanDuel, he's 5,500. At 5,500. At 33, 34 minutes, would you be, is that like considered like, or is that a lock to you, or is that just like not close enough? I don't know. What are your thoughts? I mean,
that's not a lock, I don't think. I mean, we've run him out there before. The nice thing about Smart is, unlike a lot of these shooting guards, he does chip in across multiple categories. Like, he will get some rebounds and some assists and, you know, block a shot or two occasionally and get a steal. So, you know, he can add, his stats can sort of add up over time. If you look at his last five games, you'll see like he's got a 26, 25, 30 fantasy point performance. And on 5,500, that's already pretty decent. And if the uptick in minutes, you know, kind of gets him over the threshold, then I think we're sitting pretty. But yeah, the big issue for me is I think especially the assist numbers are going to go down the more often that he shares the court with Kyrie Irving. And that's, I think, you know, because Kyrie is just such a ball dominant player, and he's been less so since he's been in Boston, but it's still a concern of mine. But yeah, I think on a night where I'm not totally sure how the value is going to shake out. I wouldn't be like, if he were going to start, I wouldn't be like, I have to play DFS tonight. Like, I can't miss this because the value is too insane. But sure, I think he can slot in. But speaking of Kyrie, though, I mean, Kyrie, 8,600 on FanDuel, pretty good matchup here. Charlotte, a top 10 pace, and has had defensive struggles in the backcourt, just even when they were a slower team. They were giving up above average points per minute to point guards and shooting guards. Today he goes up against Kemba Walker and the Hornets. Do we think we can play Kyrie at 8,600? Right now he's in lineup 3 on FanDuel.
I would rather play, and we'll get to him, I'd rather play John Wall at 87, personally. Like, I think that they're so close together that I think that if I just had to pick between, I don't think you're going to end up playing both of them. And I think if I had to choose between the two, I would probably go with John Wall just because I just think he's a better overall fantasy commodity, and he has a pretty good matchup too. It's close though, because, and I think also I'm probably a little bit high on Irving's minutes. Now, he did, the last time Jaylen Brown sat, he took a ton of shots. He took like 27 shots. Now, Brown is not a huge uses guy to the point where you are like,
it could be correlation, not causation.
Exactly. Like, he's not freeing up tons of stuff. So, okay, I think I find Kyrie interesting. And one other guy I think is actually sort of interesting here is that if Smart moves into the starting lineup, actually Terry Rozier plays a lot more off the bench because he then becomes like sort of the de facto, like he comes in on an earlier rotation when Smart had usually come in. So I think that I usually don't like playing bench guys, but Rozier is somewhat interesting because I think we can feel pretty confident about like 25 minutes out of him. And I think that, again, I don't usually like to go to the bench for these guys, but he strikes me as maybe somewhere to go. And then on the Charlotte side, they're just back to their old thing of they don't know who they want to play a power forward. Like, you know, Marvin Williams starts and he plays 23 minutes and they bring Kaminsky off the bench. Batum and Walker's minutes are fairly set, so I'm not so worried about them. And Walker's still coming pretty cheap on DraftKings, but this is a bad matchup. Boston's still a pretty good defensive team. They've slipped a little bit in the short term. They're probably coming down to earth a little bit just in terms of, like, with all the injuries that they've suffered. It was going to be hard for them to maintain. It was just going to be hard for them to maintain such a high level of just play based on how many guys they had lost. So want to like some of these guys on Charlotte, but just really can't do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's move over to John Wall's game. Washington goes into Atlanta at 7:30 game. This total ticks up a little bit. It's 213. Washington is favored by 6 points. Wall right now, I'm going to give you some Wall stats because he's the one guy I was excited to talk about today. So he's 8,700, which is kind of criminally below where it has been in the past if he's going to be back up to his high or like sort of peak minutes when he's not injured. And it looks like things are heading in that direction. So while this season, he's third in the league in total time of possession per game. And that's in spite of the fact that his average minutes is just 33 minutes, when I think you and I both agree that his, you know, his normal rotation is probably something like 37 to 39 minutes a game when everything is clicking well for them. He's leading the NBA right now in average seconds per touch with 6.63. The guy just has the ball in his hands constantly, which leads to obviously a ton of shooting opportunities, but passing opportunities as well. What's the deal with this $8,700 price tag in a pretty solid matchup here with Atlanta? This is just wrong, right?
It's a mistake, yeah. He last game on Christmas Day, he had had the minutes restriction lifted. They hadn't announced that before the game started. And then they went back right out and he played 39 minutes. And that's just going to be the plan with him because, as we know, the Washington is in the hunt here, at least for the not for the playoffs, but they're I think they're maybe like second or third in the East anyway. But they just need to play him and Beal and all those guys, really just those two guys, and probably Porter as well, as many minutes as possible. The price is a complete mistake at $8,700. And by the way, he's in the top lineups now on FanDuel at only 36 minutes, which is probably low if the game stays close. So, I mean, if you take him to 37 or 38 minutes, which is probably being a little bit aggressive, I'm actually shocked too, because he had a really good Christmas Day game. He went 21, 14, and 5 on Christmas, and with 2 days to and the price, I think, was the same. I think it was $8,700 on Christmas Day too. So, yeah, complete mistake. I think he'll end up becoming pretty much a complete chalk play on FanDuel, I would suspect. It's really hard to get away from that price. So, like him, really like that Porter's minutes ticked back up.
I was looking at him too. $6,400. He's 35 minutes. Like that price could be really low. He paid this price handily in 22 minutes against Orlando, and obviously 35 minutes as well. He was in the 7,000s before going down, so he looks like a steal right now too.
His minutes, I think, had more to do with injury stuff as well too. I think they were managing his minutes, and they were getting some good minutes out of Mike Scott off the bench, and I think they were just less inclined to have to go crazy with him until the games became important, or they just knew that he was fully back to health. So I think Porter and Wall here are just fantastic plays. I suspect they're pretty popular plays, all things considered. And then at the Atlanta side of the ball, I think you can maybe consider Schrader and really nothing else. At least Ovo played a lot of minutes, but I mean, I don't know how you feel about Atlanta. You've done plenty of minutes audits on these guys. They're a team where you can see a Taurean Prince play for 34, and then the next game goes 24. And really, if you're new to basketball, and you see the teams that do this, if you see like lots of jockeying around of minutes among the starters, it means one of two things. It means one, the teams are bad. So that's usually sign number one, that why they juggle around. But the other thing too is that means those players are very matchup dependent, right? So like a guy like Ilyasova, these are guys where Coach Bud is fine playing them in certain matchups and just not in others. And it's really hard. You're not going to know that ahead of time, right? Like they're not going to come out and say, he's going to be on his 27 minute rotation today, or, you know, they have a lot of wings. He's going to be on his 34 minute rotation. So a lot of times, and usually it's a combo deal of both. The team is bad and the coach is trying to get cute and play different matchups. So just something to keep an eye on in Atlanta. Definitely.
Yeah, you've seen that with like Wesley Johnson this season. Like if the other team has a big wing that he needs to guard, he'll play more minutes. I think the matchup thing is definitely one of the underexplored areas right now in the DFS landscape.
Yeah. And it's hard. Like sometimes you can go back and do some historical stuff where you look back and teams, like, especially it really happens a lot more when you play the good teams. Like if you go back and look at Atlanta when they play, let's say Cleveland, you will see Prince and Bazemore play more because those guys can actually, I don't know, sort of guard LeBron, or they're at least they can profile.
Well, it's not an auto loss if they're covering,
right,
LeBron.
Exactly. So anyway, Atlanta falls into that category, and I'm really just it needs a short slate and a fantastic matchup for me to get excited about those guys.
Yeah, it makes sense. What about Markieff Morris? I mean, his minutes have been, you know, coming around 30. He's been sort of decent on this $4,500 price tag. I get that it's a big slate. Do we have any interest in him?
Yeah, I'm like a Markieff truther. I think that I think Washington does what they do want to play him a lot.
I think so too.
But he's such a foul box. Like he's a complete head case. So he's got the two things going for him. He's a complete head case and he fouls all the time and he just takes awful shots. And when that's going for him, then he just gets instantly taken out of the game because Washington's plan is not for Markieff Morris to be jacking up like mid-range jump shots and threes. Like that's what Beal and Wall and Porter are there for. But Morris does it. He's a pretty high usage guy, because he's a complete chucker. So I think they would want a version of him to play like 30 minutes a game because he's a pretty good player, but he just has an impossible time staying on the court because I would say the mental game keeps him off the court more than anything else. And they have like a reasonable backup in Mike Scott, who's pretty good. I love playing Markieff, and I think he has upside, and I am also fully prepared for him to to have two fouls in the first 4 minutes and just be sitting on the bench. So yeah, like,
so am I.
So that's kind
of right. I mean, so for cash game reasons, you know, it might be kind of weird to be out on Marquise Island, but I think for big tournaments, it's probably a pretty safe bet. So speaking of big tournaments, Enos Kanter almost won you some combination of either Christmas presents for life for your kids or a Lamborghini or something of that nature. I've been absolutely going off. I'm talking about the New York at Chicago game here. What the heck is going on with Enos Kanter? We can talk about whoever else is on these teams in a second, but comes out of nowhere, goes from 22 minutes up to 29 against Detroit, scores 57 fantasy points, plays 35 against Philly, and drops 57 fantasy points again. What, I mean, is this the truth? Is this guy, should he be a $9,000 player?
No.
We're getting for 6,000? What's going on here?
Well, that Christmas Day game, yeah, you're talking about, I was like at a pretty big sweat on the Christmas Day $8 DraftKings tournament where I was, I think at the most I was in like sixth, going down the stretch
with a couple minutes left, right?
Yeah, with Josh Hart and Clarkson, and just kind of ended up like in 13. Nice. It was a nice cash, but I thought it was staring at one of those like the all time cashers and
for one of the big ones.
So, yeah. But Kanter was a big reason. He went completely off on Philly on Christmas Day. His whole thing is if he can play minutes. If we know that if he plays like 30 minutes, the guy is excellent on the offensive end. Like he's a very good rebounder and he's a very good scorer. The problem is, as everyone knows, he's on all time awful at defense right now. So he was able to stay on the court against Philly because Embiid is like not all that great of an on ball defender either. The team gets better as when he's on the court, just overall on defense, mostly because they just make more shots and he is a good defender. But Kanter, I mean, ate him alive in the post.
Kanter's a strong offensive player. Really, his big difficulty is getting punished by good offensive players in the front court on the opposing team. And Chicago doesn't really pose that risk, right? I mean, Robin Lopez is a defense only center. Never creates his own shot. Nikola Mirotić isn't going to be hanging around down near the basket. Not that he would be covering Mirotić anyway, but that, you know, Mirotić is not like a guy like, say, Blake Griffin, who's going to get him into foul trouble. Incidentally, this is a great spot for him, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think I want to give him I want to feel safe with something like 30 minutes, and I'm fully prepared for him to play 24. Like he's just really just a tournament play. He's really tough to roster in cash. The price did come up.
You don't want to play Kanter in cash tonight?
I don't think so. We just have too much. 6,800 on DraftKings is pretty aggressive. And a FanDuel price, I didn't look at that yet.
6,000 on FanDuel.
Oh, I take it back on FanDuel. He is like the number one.
I think he'll be a cash game staple.
Yeah, I take it back. I didn't realize he was this cheap. So yes, right now he's showing up in almost all the lineups. So at DraftKings, I'd probably say no thanks, though it's going to be close. And then it's always funny with these huge games because that really is he's a good player, but the 31 and 22 is an outlier game. Now he did double-double.
I agree, by the way, just to be on the record. I think that he probably won't average a 30-20 for the rest of the season.
He did double-double the other two games. I'm still really interested in Kristaps here. The minutes have been been trending pretty well for him as they seem to be more comfortable. They're basically just in a 34-minute rotation with him. So I think we're still getting him at a decent price. And I think you're right. Yeah, 6,000 for Kanter probably does make him a cash game play. Pretty solid on FanDuel.
Yeah, great. Anything else from this New York Chicago game? I mean, Chicago's been doing the old minutes shuffle, especially at the wing position, although perhaps you get some safety with Justin Holiday. You know, when games go right, he will play mid-30s, even to high-30s minutes, relatively affordable right now. Anything else from this game that we can like?
Yeah, if you catch Chris Dunn on the right night, you have a ton of upside. You know, I was saying this.
$8,000.
He's still pretty. I mean, he if the shot is falling like it was last night, then he is. He can maintain this
six
price.
Defensive stats like he did last night. Yeah.
Well, but he does that a lot though. Like he's a very good defensive player. The defensive stats for him are
the steals are
you can yeah right. You can kind of bake them into his projection pretty aggressively because he does. I think he has. I think he might lead the league in steals. So he, it's just need to catch him on the right night because he's also will run into nights where he just can't shoot and then he just gets pulled. Right.
Boston, 20 points against Milwaukee, 3 days separated the games.
Yeah. So no, it's just, he's strictly a GPP play. And then these other guys like Valentine, Holiday, Holiday's of all the starters, Holiday's minutes are probably the safest and he really just needs to score. Right. He didn't score last night. He shot 5 for 15 from the field. We had him in cash. He was able to basically sneak back to value in the second half, thank God, because it was looking real. He just did full on cardio work for the first for the first half, where he just took two shots and had one rebound and played a lot of minutes. And I was watching this game, and he just basically his role was to jog up the court, stand in the corner, and then jog back down the court and play a little defense. And that was basically how he spent his first 16 minutes on the court. His minutes are pretty safe, and that's kind of it's just tough to get excited about Chicago.
Yeah, fair enough. So moving on, we have another 8 o'clock game here. Denver travels into Minnesota. This game has the second highest total on the day, relatively close spread with Minnesota favored by 5.5 points. And yet none of the players in this game show up in any of the top 10 lineups. Why is that? You know, like, I mean, so I think I have a pretty good answer in my head, but for the average person who sees a high total here, they're going to want to prioritize these players. Why are none of these guys showing up? And is there value that we can find if we look a little closer?
Okay, so real quick, so you're referring to FanDuel, but so in FanDuel they do not show up, but in DraftKings they do. Like, yeah, right now, yeah, Jokic is in 100% of lineups right now. Karl Anthony Towns in 100% of lineups, and Jeff Teague is in like 75%. So it's just a pricing thing. Like they're Jokic is still way too cheap at 8,600 on DraftKings. Towns is way too cheap at 8,700, and then Teague at 6,100. You can live with that. So I think if you were looking to if you're looking to get exposure to this game, you just need to play DraftKings. I think on FanDuel, as we've seen for most of the season, the pricing is just tighter on FanDuel now. It's just crazy to say that because
to be fair, it's not hard to have tight pricing on these Minnesota guys, right? Because to a man, they all play high 30s minutes a game basically, and they have all season. And so a guy like Jimmy Butler, sure, he's paid this price, he's 8,900. He scored 45 fantasy points in each of his last two games. Those were in two of the best possible matchups against Phoenix and LA. And by the way, that's going to inflate all of the Minnesota prices because I think FanDuel is a lot more sensitive this season to just recent performance. And so if you look at the last five games for Minnesota, Phoenix, Portland, at Denver, at Phoenix, LA, like that is about as fast pace and good a schedule as you can have for fantasy production. So I think they're just all too expensive there. With perhaps the exception of Teague. I think Teague, he was one of the guys whose minutes wasn't quite as secure, whose performance goes up and down a little bit. So he's the least safe, but probably the best value.
I think in terms of just consistency rating, I was trying to look this up while you're talking real quick. But in terms of like the top overall average fantasy point scorers, the guys on Minnesota, like Karl Anthony Towns, yeah, they have the lowest, some of the lowest deviation around their minutes. Like Towns is the lowest deviation, and then Butler as well. And even Taj Gibson has actually been pretty consistent there. And Wiggins too. Like this is just a Coach Tibbs thing that he just runs his guys to death. They're going to be dead by the end of the season because they played too many minutes. But it does give such security when it comes to it. And if I'm getting exposure to these guys, it's definitely on DraftKings tonight. I think Towns will be a complete chalk play. Jokic is coming off the flagrant foul 2 last night where he got kicked out of the game, which actually was a total killer because that stopped us from cashing on DraftKings. Would have been easily got there if he just plays the fourth quarter, any part of the fourth quarter. So anyway, yeah, the Minnesota guys, I'm looking to get exposure there. I mean, Denver, I mean, you've been down the Denver train here before. They're another team that's very difficult to get a handle on what their plan is. You know, we've seen guys like Fareed play and then just start and then just not play at all for long stretches. They ran we just start Torrey Craig kind of out of nowhere.
How about the wing guys, right? I mean, Barton, Harris, like Torrey Craig, Chandler, like just any of these guys on any given night could be the guy who's plays for 41 minutes and goes off or plays 25 minutes and doesn't play at all.
Chandler's minutes seem to be ticking back up into the space of normal for him, like 33, 34. I think we can feel pretty good about that. But like, and guys like Harris.
Famous last ones. That's all I got to say about that.
I feel pretty confident with Gary Harris at somewhere around 36 or 37 minutes.
Yeah, Harris's minutes are a little bit more reliable.
But then like Jamal Murray, you can't trust this. Like he plays 35 minutes and he'll play 22 the next game. He's a matchup guy, especially if they want to keep Moutier was available last night. He only played 2 minutes. So, and again, they're on the back-to-back. They're tough to know about. I don't really know. Will Barton played the second unit point guard more than anything else. I don't know. Denver's outside of Jokic. I'm struggling to see a lot that I like here. But it's going to end up a price thing and a minutes thing. And I know what you mean. Sometimes it's hard to fade those high scoring games. This one doesn't strike me as like a must play game though, for outside of those guys I mentioned on DraftKings.
No, I think that's probably pretty fair. I think, we've talked oftentimes about how the major superpower as a DFS player is predicting opportunity, right? So as people who are doing this every day for a living, we're going to be targeting the guys whose opportunity we can predict more effectively. And for cash game purposes, when our goal is simply to beat 50% or 55% of the field in order to cash, like we just don't need to take risks trying to figure out, is it Jamal Murray night or isn't it, versus in big tournaments, you get paid to do the exact opposite. If you can catch lightning in a bottle, if you can figure out where there's outsized opportunity relative to price, then you can really get paid off. So like your Chris Dunn example.
Yeah.
So we'll move into the other 8 o'clock games in a second. Did you have some more thing
to say? No, go ahead.
Okay, great. We'll move into the 8 o'clock games in a second here. I think first, though, we're going to talk about a sponsor. So we'll talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor has been running all sorts of great free rolls here in the holiday season. They run them for both the NBA and the NFL. And if you're not familiar with FantasyFactor.com, they run a salary cap game format just like you're used to on FanDuel and DraftKings, with the major advantage that you don't have to play against great players all the time. So if you're the type of player who just wants to play five or maybe $100 per night, you can head on over to FantasyFactor.com, get started today, playing the salary cap games you're used to, and maybe winning a few bucks for free in one of their great free rolls. I think this week they have a Friday free roll for the NBA, and they always have a Sunday free roll for the NFL. And those are always very aggressively underfunded and very affordable. So moving right along into another 8 o'clock game, and speaking of crazy minutes, we have Brooklyn heading into New Orleans. Brooklyn actually, you know, has been a little bit more regular in the minutes this season than they have been in the past, which isn't to say they've been regular by any stretch of the imagination. And then, of course, New Orleans, I mean, we're always looking to target guys going up against Brooklyn. They're playing one of the fastest paces in the league again this season, currently ranking fourth overall with bottom five defensive efficiency. So there has to be someone we can play from this game, right?
I mean, I'm a little concerned. Davis has come back and been, you know, quote unquote, healthy for him in the last two games, and he's only played 31 and 32 minutes. Yeah, now, both of those games were, I mean, they were winning by 15 against the Heat, so you could maybe claim blowout, but this is actually, he's been kind of blowout proof in the past. Like, they've been happy to run him out for huge minutes, just even if the games were out of hand, just because that's sort of how his rotations went. Now, the starters as a whole lost minutes, so maybe they're getting a little bit smarter, but I am a little concerned with Davis's minutes here. Now, they're big favorites too. They're minus 10, and they've been playing well of late. I mean, how concerned would you be about the blowouts? Because the clear guys to play here are Davis, Cousins, and I would say Drew Holiday probably. Yep. Those would be the three. And then to some degree, Etuan Moore, but you really need him to score. I mean, how comfortable are you with, one, the Pelicans maybe getting a little smarter with how they play some of their minutes, the blowout thing? I mean, that's my major concern here.
Yeah, I think the blowout concern is pretty reasonable. I guess, like, for me, the Pelicans don't really cut the mold of a team that's very likely to blow teams out, generally speaking. You know, they don't have a great three-point shooter. Sure, they can just crush people on the boards and have really efficient offensive possessions, but I feel like three-point shooting teams, and I should just do research on this at some point, but I feel like three-point shooting teams, they're going to have more variation around their scores. Like, if you just happen to go 7 from 9 of three for three in the third quarter, then you're just up by enough that you can sit your starters. So even though it's a 10-point spread here, you know, on average, that suggests that the game would only be 7.5-point spread going into the fourth quarter. So, and it's not perfect like that, because obviously sometimes New Orleans is just up by a ton and then winds up winning by 7 because they sit their starters a little bit. So, you know, not all that's perfect, but I do think that, like, I'm thinking about the other big money options we've talked about so far and the ones coming up on the horizon here. So, like, you know, I guess John Wall sort of qualifies there. We agree the Minnesota guys were too expensive. Maybe we think about Chris Stapps for cash. Westbrook has Toronto, which isn't great. LeBron has Sacramento, so that has blowout risk. You have Golden State going in, Utah versus Golden State. So that has just a low total overall relative to normal Golden State games. So I think given all those factors, it seems like there's risk across the board in the big money tier. And for that reason, accepting a little bit of blowout risk here doesn't seem that bad to me, I guess.
No, and we have Davis pretty much right in line projection wise with LeBron and Durant right now. And it really probably this will end up coming down to a thing of, like, where the value lies in the other positions. I think it's if you can get enough power forward, value, then I think it's fine to not play Davis. And if we're struggling to find, you know, a guy or a couple guys to play in those positions, because like I said, I don't think they're going to, just because of the guys we kind of mentioned on DraftKings, I don't think we're going to be paying all the way up for this core group of guys over there. But on FanDuel, I think it's mostly just going to come down to where the value is. And what we've seen is that small forward can be just as hard to fill the position as power forward, if not harder. There's been times where small forward has just been a complete disaster zone of guys, you know, where you're kind of looking at, like, Jonathan Simmons. Last night, you're like paying mid-tier prices for guys like Harrison Barnes or Josh Richardson, which is not terrible, but on a big slate, it's kind of hard to stomach some of those plays. And so I think that maybe that could be the only thing that keeps Davis off, because obviously the matchup is a dream matchup. Nets are still pretty bad at defense. They still run at a pretty fast pace. Their rotations are all over the place. They have no really relevant bigs that can handle either of these guys. Like, it's like Tyler Zeller, Quincy Acey, like, I don't know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is not a guy that's really going to match up very well. So it's a dream matchup, really. And I'm just, and look, I mean, how worried are we still about the Anthony Davis thing? And we can move off this game in one second, but we've just seen multiple times again this season where he just gets hurt and doesn't return. And like, or the other night he just goes to the locker room and doesn't come out for the beginning of the second half and loses like 6 minutes. I mean, how much should this actually just factor into our projections at this point? Because it's one thing to kind of laugh about it, and it's another thing to have it just happen once every four games. And I think at that point, I'm also fine just being pretty passive in our projections with him, because I just feel like this kind of thing happens to him way more than it happens to anybody else.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially for the big money players, the guys who you invest, you know, 15% of your salary in or whatever, it really, really hurts to have that guy not even miss one quarter, even be out in the locker room with a hangnail or whatever for 6 minutes of the game. Like that kind of stuff really adds up. So I think with Davis, it has to be baked into the projection on some level. It's just tricky because like the DFS community writ large is still willing to take that risk. And even the very good players, in my observation, and when other people are going to be on him in great matchups like this, like say this game had a 5-point spread instead of a 10-point spread, you couldn't not play Davis because he might leave the game early, right? Like I think that would be overly cautious. So probably the correct thing to do is actually figure out, is it 1 in 4 games? Is it 1 in 10 games? And then try to, you know, estimated appropriately. But yeah, it's the least fun thing about DFS basketball for me, actually, I think, is running Anthony Davis and worrying, you know, I can't even watch the games because if he, you know, bumps up against someone or, you know, kind of runs gingerly, I just feel terrified. So
it's every game I played him this season for sure.
I'm serious.
No, like yeah. I rostered him the game he got ejected. I rostered him the game that he pulled his groin, and I rostered him the game where he didn't come out of the locker room. Those are the last three I can remember playing him. Like, so like, this just is, it's not a me thing. I personally don't factor into it at all, but man, it does seem like it happens every time. Let's move off these guys. They're too tilting.
Yeah. Brooklyn side of the ball, I don't think there's really too much to see here. The minutes are just all over the place. It's a pretty reasonable matchup at New Orleans, but you know, obviously the blowout risk is there. And so there's some maybe big tournament options like Damari Carroll or something, but it's a shame. It's just a waste of a really good matchup with New Orleans, who does play the 7th fastest pace at arguably just as bad defense as the Nets. So yeah, for your big tournaments, keep an eye out there. So moving on, we have one more 8 o'clock game, and that's Toronto goes into Oklahoma City. This game actually has a relatively tight spread and a relatively low total, but there's a lot of names you'll recognize on these teams. You know, guys that have won people a lot of money recently, Paul George, Russell Westbrook. Toronto has their big guys. Any value we can derive from this game?
It's a really bad matchup for OKC. Toronto's a very good
defensive team. It's a bad matchup going the other way too, right? I mean,
yeah, Toronto just has the wrong kind of guys to want to play guys like OKC. They have a lot of wings. They're very good at defense. They run a slow pace. All those mid-range kind of usage moments from DeRozan just really slow the pace down for them. This is a game I'm pretty much going to skip. Like you said, OKC is very good on defense going the other way. I don't think, with all the other value, with all the other big names going today, if it was a smaller slate, I think we might consider Russ and PG, and I just don't think you need to here because they're just two good defensive teams. There's like, why bother? Kind of that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I agree completely, and it's kind of a shame. There are some interesting fantasy guys on any given night, but I agree that I don't think tonight really is necessarily that night. So
now, Oklahoma City is 4th and Toronto's 5th in defense. Like, right. This is just like, I don't think so. People always think of these teams like this either. You know, I think if you were to like ask who are the best defensive teams in basketball, people would probably say things like, well, Boston, the Jazz, because they're so slow, you know, like teams like that. But I mean, these teams are among the best in defense. And when you get, I get they have superstar level guys on them, but when you, there's no reason to go there on a big slate. That's mostly my point.
All righty. Speaking of reasons to go there on a big slate, Cleveland heads into Sacramento. LeBron is showing up in all of our lineups right now. He's 11-5. This game has a pretty wide spread too, but LeBron's been kind of in beast mode, minus that Golden State game on Christmas Day. What's the deal to LeBron right now? I mean, is 11, like, this season, we've had to get used to paying these high prices for him, right? It wasn't always this way with LeBron. He's kind of just stepped into this $11,500 to $12,000 range. Sacramento represents a really, really strong matchup. They definitely don't, like, there are teams that have guys who can sort of hang with LeBron, like you've mentioned in some other games today. Sacramento does not seem to be one of them. Is LeBron kind of a cash game must for you tonight, given that all the big money guys have question marks around them?
It's just the minutes, right? Like, they just don't. He averages the most minutes in the league, and he's the best player. He's the best player, and he averages the most minutes. Like, I don't really know.
The best fantasy player, right? I mean, he's not the best fantasy player on a points per minute basis in the league.
No, but the minutes, not in the points per minute deal, but the minutes are just so, they play him so much. They're playing
just
him
a huge floor, right? Like, it's really hard for him to get buzzed on.
Yeah, it's an irresponsible. They're really just playing him an irresponsible amount of minutes. That's sure. mostly what it is. It's like he's played 40, 39, 34, and 41 his last four games. The Golden State game was bad. That's always going to be a bad matchup for him defensively. Especially when he's matched up with Iguodala, who they're going to play.
They just run multiple guys that can cover him, like Draymond Green
covered him most of the game. Like he didn't really have to deal with Durant too much, just the way that the game was kind of going. But so that was a bad matchup. But the games before that, he's taken 20 or more, 22, 23, and 23 shots in the last three games. He's just the plan. I think I'm totally fine for FanDuel, especially having to roster two small forwards. Like if I had to choose between him and Durant, I would easily choose LeBron. Oh, yeah. I think
no question.
In this matchup. And then just in terms of just how some of the other positions are shaking out, I think he's the guy. One guy I wanted to get your opinion on, though, is Kevin Love. Love is up to 8,400, had an awesome Christmas day. He's been really good in the short term, too. And when the three pointer especially is falling, he's able to stay on the court. He played 36 minutes against Golden State, which I thought he was lucky that he was shooting so well because he's a bad defensive mismatch when it comes to Golden State because he's not all that good at defense. But
he was killing them on the boards too, to be fair too. Like he was really doing a lot of work because they have a lot of tall players on that team, and it's
it's really only the minutes. Like from a fantasy perspective, Love is a great fantasy player, right? He's still a very good rebounder and he's a very good shooter. And it's just that he has, you know, he played 36 minutes against Golden State, but then in a close game against Chicago, played 29. That's not because of foul trouble. Just he only played 29 minutes. Close game against Milwaukee, only played 30. Close game against Washington, played 32. Close game against Utah, played 28. Like, where do we set his minutes and feel comfortable about it? Because just too often he gets rotated out based on I'm guessing the defense, but he just doesn't. It seems like he should be playing 35 minutes a game. And that's just not the case.
Yeah, I don't think he's a play tonight. I agree that he seems like he should be playing that many minutes, but we have a long stretch now where the plan seems to be to play him 29 minutes and then maybe in case of emergency break glass and he plays more than that. But I mean, just look at this Sacramento game that also happened in December. Love played 28 minutes. LeBron played 41 minutes in that game, and LeBron nearly triple doubled and scored 67 fantasy points. So not that LeBron necessarily takes away from Love, but I just think that Love is a big tournament kind of guy on these prices. And even though he's been paying it somewhat consistently recently, and he's excellent on a points per minute basis, when the minutes are going to be that erratic, you know, 15, 20% difference on any given night, you just can't play the guy in cash games.
And then on the Sacramento side, you know, last time Zebo played the Cavs, he was like had one of the best games of his recent career. He was awesome. He started. Yeah. And I just don't feel, I mean, we're coming off a game. He played mid 20s minutes. The Kings did their old typical Kings thing last night where they just don't play their guys. Where do we want to do you stand? Could you stomach rostering a guy like Zebo? Like he's on the back to back. He didn't play many minutes last night. He's a guy. It's really hard to find anything else in this team, but I mean,
it's going to be really hard for me to want to justify playing any Sacramento guys just in general on any given night, unless there's maybe injury news, you know, like or someone like super cheap, like Frank Mason Jr. gets this random start or something. But after that, or maybe Frank Mason III, the Kings are just a team that's way too erratic. And given the increased blowout risk, I feel like also teams that are just really, really bad, when they're running the risk of getting blown out, their coaches also just get angry and like tilt pull people, even when they're down like just nine in the first quarter or something. They just give up and kind of take their ball and go home. So I don't think there's any value here on the Kings side for cash game purposes.
Yeah, that's kind of where I stand too. And it's a shame because they have some fantasy relevant guys and you just simply can't trust it on a night to night basis.
Yeah, I think that's right. Going into the 10:30 games, Memphis goes into LA. This game has the lowest total on the slate. So congratulations to the Lakers. I don't know if they've been in a game with the lowest total on the slate outside of maybe like some two game slate 3 years ago that I don't recall, but that's some pretty uncharted territory for them. Speaks to their defensive improvement this season and just becoming a better team in general. But we do have some injury concerns here. You know, we have and just increased opportunity. So is this going to be a game where we tap into a little bit of value?
Yeah, real quick about defensive, the Lakers are top 10 defense this year in defensive efficiency, which is crazy. The strides that they've made on the defensive end.
Well, because they're still playing at an insanely fast pace. They're still leading the league in pace. So it's not like it's a lack of possessions. But the fact that they're really boning up on defense is a welcome sign.
Well, it's really funny, too, because the other team that you think of that plays at there's like another team that plays at a really fast pace and it's great at defense, and that's Golden State. And this is what Luke Walton came from, right? Like, and this is like clearly what they're trying to model their team after is to like do those two things, which is to shoot threes, and they do have a couple guys that do that pretty well, and to play a fast pace but also just really get out after on the defensive end. And if you think that's where Walton's plan was coming up from Golden State, you know, as the assistant coach, they are sort of modeling that, and it's because it's really hard to keep this kind of defensive efficiency when you play this fast. So anyway, kudos to them. It's kind of surprising that you're seeing them. Lonzo Ball is still sitting, so I think we can fire Jordan Clarkson back up. He had a great Christmas Day, and
very cheap.
The price really hasn't moved all that much for him. The other guys we're waiting to hear on Brandon Ingram. It will matter for him. Ingram is he himself not a play, but Josh Hart is possibly a play if Ingram were to sit, because Hart did get the start for him on Christmas Day and played decent amount of minutes. I think with those injuries, well, specifically with the Ball injury, we can feel really comfortable giving Clarkson a lot of minutes and just saying that he's a play. I'm wondering though, a guy like Kuzma. So Kuzma has been playing a ton. He's been awesome. He's pushing up a case for Rookie of the Year if Ben Simmons weren't around. And even Simmons probably slipped a little bit of late. What are your thoughts on Kuzma about where we want to set his minutes? Played 41 on Christmas, 35, and then three straight games of 40 minutes or more.
I think it's like 39 or 40 minutes. I mean, I'm biased against Kuzma in the short term because he screwed me against Portland. But I think, he's a 39 to 40 minute player, especially in a game that is just separated by a 2-point spread per Vegas. So I think we'll see Kuzma's minutes come in. I mean, it's still Memphis, you know, that they're not the defensive stalwart they've been in the past, but it's still just not a very good matchup because they're playing even slower than they have in the past. They're playing at the very slowest pace in the entire NBA at 95.4. And that's just really, really slow. So I'm not sure, you know, outside of the new value guys like Jordan Clarkson, if we can pay a season high price on Kuzma in a season worst matchup.
Yeah, no, I probably stay in there. I will just say for going forward, it is encouraging on the Lakers that we are starting to see more set rotations from their guys as they just become a better team. Like, I don't think they're not going to be a playoff team this year, but
they're just a real team now. Congratulations.
And look what happens when you get a real team. You just get real you get actual real rotations. Like, it's not rocket science trying to figure these guys out. And then on the Memphis side, you know, I don't mind Tyreek, sort of. I don't mind Andrew Harrison playing like mid thirties, so low 30s minutes. Gasol.
He's been playing great.
Gasol's a guy that has been kind of hit or miss of late. And I just need to get out of my head that these aren't the Lakers of old in terms of matchup. Like, they're still a decent matchup. They're not a team you need to avoid because the pace itself does outweigh some of the, in terms of just from a fantasy perspective, the pace does outweigh some of the defensive efficiency stuff. Like, you're still fine in close games getting a lot of volumes of possessions or a lot of volume on those possessions. But the only guys I feel comfortable with are Tyreek, Harrison, and to a lesser extent, Gasol.
Yeah, I think all three of those viable cash game options for me tonight. The minutes have been relatively secure. With Harrison in particular, if we can pencil him in for 29 plus minutes, I think a $4,200 price tag is probably just too low. So yeah, keep an eye on all those guys. Final game of the night, Utah goes into Golden State. It's another game with a relatively low total, especially considering that Golden State's involved and a huge spread. I mean, is this a game we want to target in any kind of format?
Yeah, you got to really be worried about blowout just because we've seen Golden State is still able to just pile it on even without Curry. Getting Draymond back really helps them. And they've been one of these teams that they're sometimes just personnel independent just because they have Durant. I mean, when you have Durant and Clay, you're just kind of, you're not really personnel independent. Yeah. You have two of the best players in all of basketball.
You're pretty good personnel.
I mean, right now our system likes Favors and Bell, and I'm very concerned. Well, Jordan Bell still continued to get the start at center even with Draymond back. So that's encouraging. So I think we can feel pretty safe about his 25, 26 ish minutes, especially if their plan is to not move Zaza back into the starting. Because Zaza was quote unquote healthy last game. He was available to play and just didn't start. So the fact that Bell remained in the starting lineup, I think, is an encouraging sign. He's never going to play 30 minutes a game, but you're also not so worried about him on the defensive end here because there's no Gobert and the Jazz have been playing Favors at the five. But right now, Favors at 5,600 and Bell at 4,900. Would we be Favors in the back-to-back, but he didn't play a lot last night, so I'm not so worried about his minutes getting crushed. Would we feel comfortable with him in cash games? He's in 100% of the lineups right now, and I'm prepared to be less aggressive on that projection especially if we felt like the blowout was a major concern.
Well, right, because every time we think about totals, we want to be mindful that they take into account both teams that are involved, right? So Golden State gets an extreme pace down matchup going up against Utah, but Utah gets the reverse. They get a very fast matchup against Golden State. Now, the tricky thing, of course, is the blowout. I mean, I think Favors, especially Utah, has been pretty careful about managing his minutes in the past, so I think he is a risk to lose some of his minutes here. And I think the same thing holds true for Golden State going the other way. The one encouraging thing I have, like in my mind anyway, about playing the Golden State guys is that first of all, without Steph, Golden State is incentivized to pound the ball down low just a little bit more. And Utah's interior defense greatly suffers without Rudy Gobert on the floor. So, you know, Utah, just we talked about the Lakers, you know, having to sort of change our perception as to who they are defensively. I think you have to do that with Utah as well. Seeing them doesn't necessarily mean an auto X for the entire opposing team when Gobert isn't out there. So I think potentially you can play guys from this for cash game purposes. But I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I haven't done a deep enough dive just yet to try to figure out if tonight's the night where I need to take Favors and Bell at power forward. Like, is power forward really that bad? Off the top of my head, it kind of feels like it is, because we haven't mentioned any names at that position in any of the other games. So, like, I'm actually just looking Dallas, Indiana, Boston, Charlotte, Washington, Atlanta. Like, I'm going through all these games and not hearing any names that I really want to run out there.
Well, just think at the position. Here's the list. I mean, here's a list of just points. And we can get out here after this. But the list of points per dollar plays after those two guys on FanDuel is like Markieff Morris. So you're not feeling great about that. Lauri Markkanen. And you're not feeling great about that, especially with the emergence of Portis. Excuse me, of Mirotić and Portis. Then you get like Jeff Green. No thanks. Zach Randolph, we already said there's problems with him, and then unbelievably the list gets worse from there. Like, so like, this is
just don't keep reading, don't keep but, reading.
Well, this is the
I'm looking at the list now.
This is the case for Anthony Davis, right? Like, this is the case of why you might say, do we want, because if we feel like the Favors and Bell group is too risky, and there's a lot of risk involved there, especially on the Favor side, I think more on the Favor side than the Bell side for me. But then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, if I'm worried about Favors, then what happens after that? And I think that's going to be our big question going into lineups tonight, at least as at first blush, is this power forward thing, is this the place we want to spend up?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. And it'll be an interesting day, because I'm pretty sure, like, we don't actually have a lot of stuff hanging out there right now in terms of news. I think it's just the Jaylen Brown news, which is kind of nuts. Actually, Brandon Ingram, too. But in terms of fantasy relevant guys that will actually open up opportunity, there isn't that much hanging out there. But given that it's a 10 game slate, we're going to see something at some point, I would guess, that will help us make easier decisions here. Yeah, but still, it looks like a relatively interesting slate, all things considered, for the lack of injury news. So we'll continue to monitor it. But for now, we're going to get out of here. Join us tomorrow. We'll do our NBA, or no, tomorrow's just NFL. Yeah, tomorrow's just our NFL cash game plays. And then Friday, we'll be back with another NBA and NFL podcast. So in the meantime, you can head on over to dfsr.com/NBA to get started with that free 3-day trial to our lineup optimizer and projection system for the NBA and the NFL. And you can also get access to our basic projections where you can sort of build your own lineups within that tool for the NHL. So in the meantime, I'm James, and that's Doug, and we'll see you next time.